Welcome to Just for the Health of It, where we bring you new perspectives on the science of health for all. We will bring you local, state, national, and global health news, as well as local guests for homegrown perspectives and connections to local resources. Here at Just for the Health of It, we bring you the best of both social justice and personal health. At Just for the Health of It, we focus on putting the just in Just for the Health of It. Our aim is to equip you to live healthily, in a healthy community, on a just planet. I am your host, Dan Rutt. I have a BS degree in biology and a master's degree in public health, specializing in nutrition. I have worked as a health educator, nutrition counselor, community health planner, and AIDS program director, not to mention dishwasher and busboy. I am a former president of the Ohio Public Health Association. This gig is one of several of my non-paying vocations, including lifelong social justice activist, political satirist, and poet. I am a longtime resident of the Old West End neighborhood in Toledo. Welcome to Just for the Health of It. Okay, in this week's show, I'd like to stick to one theme, and that is conflicts of interest in academic health research, and I have three very good articles to elaborate that. The first one is from the Chronicle of Higher Education, which is Why Scientists Defend Dangerous Industries, and then two articles from ProPublica, an investigative reporting agency. Federally funded health researchers disclose at least $188 million in conflicts of interest. Can you trust their findings? And then we asked public universities for the professors' conflicts of interest and got the runaround. Okay, so let's start right up with why scientists defend dangerous industries. In his forthcoming book, The Triumph of Doubt, Dark Money, and the Science of Deception, David Michaels collects recent examples of industries not just questioning science, but manipulating it. Often the manipulation involves private laboratories, but he also cites numerous examples of scientists at colleges taking industry grants and delivering skewed results that promote the interests of their funders. The Chronicle spoke with Michaels about the problem, how academe contributes to it, and how to reduce the risks of the human tendency to please your funders. You identify a pattern in the behavior of decision makers at companies when they're threatened with regulation. Tell me how that works. It has become standard operating procedure for corporations to attempt to manufacture scientific uncertainty when they're faced with allegations that their products or their activities cause harm. Rather than saying, let's get to the bottom of this, let's have an independent, unconflicted evaluation, the instinct is to hire corrupt scientists and to blow smoke. The point of the book is this is done now so widely. The food industry does it, the automobile industry does it, even the National Football League does it. These activities have contributed to some of the really significant epidemics faced in the United States today. That includes obesity, diabetes, the opioid epidemic, and lung disease and cancer related to air pollution. How do you know this is happening? What's the evidence? Because of court cases, many of these documents have come out. It follows the patterns of the tobacco industry in many ways. The corporations know if it looks like you're doing research, but you ensure that whatever scientists say is more research is needed, or we just don't know what the answers are. That puts off regulation very successfully and helps defeat litigation. How do academic scientists get wrapped up in this bad science? There are academic scientists who receive funding, in some cases large amounts, to provide studies that are designed to find certain answers. We see that commonly, for example, in the nutrition literature, where the way a study is designed is very clearly going to give you a certain answer. Also, scientists who do risk assessments, who build in assumptions that essentially guarantee that only the highest level of exposures will be found to be dangerous. And then those scientists will appear in court or in regulatory proceedings for the corporation in question. Theoretically, those scientists should divulge who's paying them, but there are so many examples where that isn't the case, where it's come down to later that the academic scientist was paid. Are there policies you would want to see colleges adopt? At minimum, academic institutions should require professors to disclose conflicts of interest. Institutions should report these conflicts to their public on their websites. In submitting papers for publication, the failure of academics to disclose financial conflicts should be treated as a violation of academic integrity. Professors trade in the reputations of their universities. Universities should prohibit professors from putting their names or at least their affiliations on research in which the sponsor, rather than the researcher, has the ability to control or publish the findings or to have significant say in how the data are presented or analyzed. Contracts with private funders should be transparent and the details publicly disclosed. Academic freedom, while of great importance, is not unlimited. Universities have rejected the right of professors to advocate Holocaust denialism or white supremacism in the classroom. Many schools of public health reject funding from the tobacco industry. We in the academic community need to have a very serious discussion about the use of university resources, including reputation, to support activities that harm the public or the planet. Is there anything about academe that makes it vulnerable to this kind of catering to funders? As many academics know, in most institutions, tenure is not what it used to be. Even tenured professors are under great pressure to bring in outside funding, both to support themselves and to do the research they need to publish and advance. I have a lot of sympathy for academic scientists who have to raise research money. Once you bring in research money, you staff a laboratory, you have younger scientists and students working for you, there's great pressure to try to continue to raise that same money because people rely on you for their income. That then leads to both unconscious and occasionally conscious decisions to do things that favor the results needed by the corporation that funds you. Imagine an assistant professor trying to get tenure. Would you counsel them not to take any corporate grants? No, I think each case has to be looked at individually. The most important thing is to be absolutely open about the study, but if it appears that the research is something the company needs in order to defend their product, I would stay away from that. What we need is a system where corporations that make potentially dangerous products fund the research, but the research is done through a mechanism where the funder doesn't control who's chosen to do the study or the study's methods or interpretation. There are models for this. You could do this through the National Institutes of Health. The Health Effects Institute is jointly funded by the transportation industry and the EPA, and its research has a great deal of independence from the funders. This isn't a new idea that corporations should create a pool of money from which scientists could draw for research without creating a direct relationship between companies and scientists. Do you think this will really happen? For the health of the public, we need unconflicted science. The producers of these products need unconflicted science as well. In the long run, having corrupt science may allow them to sell a product for a few more years, but in many cases, those behaviors end up costing the company quite a bit of money. Two examples are Johnson & Johnson and Bayer, which purchased Monsanto. These companies are facing very large punitive damage awards, not simply because their products cause disease, but because the way they attempted to manipulate the science around those products has made jurors want to penalize them. What made you think we need a book like The Triumph of Doubt now? You published a book called Doubt is Our Product in 2008. With the coming of the Trump administration, I saw two things. One was that some of the same product defense scientists whom I had written about 10 years ago as trying to influence government regulatory agencies now were being put into positions to run those agencies. The other thing I saw that this approach has become so common across all industries. It isn't simply the oil industry and the chemical industry. It's become used so widely. This is an insult to science and to scientists who have worked so hard on protecting the public. Okay. Next up, federally funded health researchers disclose at least $188 million in conflicts of interest. Can you trust their findings? From ProPublica. Federally funded health researchers reported more than 8,000 significant financial conflicts of interest worth at least $188 million since 2012, according to filings in a government database obtained by ProPublica. The database of disclosures reported to the National Institutes of Health, which has not been made public before, details the financial relationships of researchers at universities, hospitals, and nonprofit organizations. These outside interests range from stock holdings in companies that may benefit from the outcome of research to payments for royalties, consulting work, and speaking engagements. The total value of the conflicts is likely much higher than $188 million, in part because 44% of the disclosures did not place a dollar value on the investigator's financial relationship. The NIH requires disclosures of, quote, significant financial conflicts, valued at more than $5,000 a year, because outside income from interested parties can potentially affect researchers' objectivity and influence the design and findings of their taxpayer-subsidized work. Although the NIH collects the filings in a central database, the agency does not post the information online and has not released the database to an outside party ever before. The NIH provided ProPublica a copy of the database in September following a Freedom of Information Act request filed in January. This is critically important, said Lisa Barrow, a University of Sydney professor who studies the impact of corporate interests on healthcare research. Many people over the years have been calling for it. We need this kind of data available. Most of the financial relationships with a value of $600,000 or more, the highest level of disclosure, resulted from researchers taking equity stakes in or licensing patents and copyrights to drug and biotech companies. The companies range from small private startups to large pharmaceutical concerns such as Bristol-Myers Squibb, Eli Lilly and Company, and Novartis. Most of the researchers who reported conflicts of interest work in academia. The University of Wisconsin-Madison filed 1,015 conflict disclosures for its researchers since 2012, the most of any institution. The University of North Carolina at Chapel Hill was second with 358 disclosures, and the University of California, Los Angeles was next with 294. With the worth of NIH-funded researchers' financial conflicts of interest, while the worth of NIH-funded researchers' financial conflicts of interest has not previously been made public, the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services Inspectors General reported last year that the value of NIH grants associated with such conflicts was $1 billion in fiscal 2018. About 3,000 researchers accounted for the 8,101 significant conflicts disclosed to the NIH. The data set includes some of the best-known names in medical research. Harvard University expert on aging David Sinclair, named one of the most influential people in healthcare by Time Magazine, reported equity stakes worth more than $600,000 in two separate companies. He is a co-founder of Cobar Incorporated, a California biotech specializing in treatments for age-related diseases. Sinclair has a grant from the National Institute of Aging to search for new peptide-coding genes, an area of research that overlaps with the work of Cobar. His conflict filing states that Cobar may be interested in collaborating on the research and that the study findings could benefit the company. Sinclair referred ProPublica to a Harvard medical spokeswoman who declined to answer questions about his disclosure. She pointed to the school's conflict of interest policy, which says, "We take very seriously our obligation to protect against any faculty bias. Identifying and managing conflicts transparently and appropriately is essential to ensure that conflicts do not undermine the integrity of the faculty and its scientific endeavors." In some cases, the institutions reported additional details about the amount of equity held by researchers, but the NIH blocked those details from disclosure, citing an exemption for withholding trade secrets and confidential commercial or financial information. Dr. J. Keith Jung, a Massachusetts General Hospital researcher on genome editing technologies, reported to the NIH in 2017 that he held an equity stake of more than $600,000 in Editas Medicine, Inc., a publicly traded company he co-founded. A note to the disclosure appears to have provided more details on the equity value, but that information was redacted by the NIH. The exact stake of his, exact size of his stake today is unavailable, but Editas reported in 2016 to the U.S. Securities and Exchange Commission that Jung owned 480,769 shares. That stake was worth $8.7 million at the time. A spokesman for the hospital and Jung said a plan to manage Jung's financial relationships is in place designed to safeguard objectivity in the researchers' research projects. The plan ensures that other researchers working with him are aware of his equity stake and that is reported in publications and presentations, a spokesperson said. The NIH is the biggest public funder of biomedical research in the country, with more than 80% of its $39.2 billion budget going towards grants to fund work at universities and research institutions. The database reflects filings made after 2011 when the NIH, under pressure from Congress, because of several high-profile cases of federally funded researchers failing to disclose millions of dollars in corporate payments, revamped its rules to strengthen monitoring of conflicts of interest. It lowered the threshold for reporting significant financial conflicts and mandated more public disclosure of the relationships. Under current rules, significant financial interest exists when a researcher receives compensation in excess of $5,000 a year from entities that may benefit from the NIH-funded work or has an ownership stake in those companies. Responsibility for determining if researchers have a conflict of interest largely falls to the institutions and schools that employ them. When researchers apply for NIH funding, they report their outside financial relationship to their employer, which review those disclosures and determine if a conflict exists. If the answer is yes, the university must develop a management plan to prevent the financial relationship from biasing the research and report the conflict to the NIH. In toughening reporting rules, the NIH initially indicated it would require institutions to post details of the financial dealings online, but that requirement was dropped before the final rules were issued, reportedly at the insistence of the White House Budget Office. In its place, the NIH gave institutions a choice. They could either post the filings online or disclose the information only when asked for it. A small number of institutions, including the University of Utah, post the financial conflict information online. Most have adopted a convoluted system allowed by the NIH that requires anyone interested to figure out whom to contact, submit a request, and then wait up to 5 business days for the information. Researchers are required to report the value of their financial interest in ranges. About half of the 8,000 disclosures were for less than $100,000. Slightly more than 500 disclosures were between $100,000 and $600,000, and 153 conflicts exceeded $600,000. Based on the maximum amount of the ranges, the capping financial interests at $600,000, the value of the financial relationships reported in the database could be as high as $237 million. In calculating a total dollar amount, ProPublica excluded duplications where a researcher with multiple grants reported the same conflict more than once. But the actual total is probably even higher. That's because the biggest payments in the top category may far surpass $600,000. And also because in nearly half of the disclosures, the reporting institution indicated that the value of the researcher's financial conflict, quote, could not be readily determined. Whether value can be determined is left up to the investigator and the institution employing that person, according to the NIH. Many filings without a value attached to them involve researchers with ownership stakes in privately held companies, which can be hard to measure. But such filings also include payments for travel and services, as well as ownership stakes in public companies. In some cases, ProPublica was able to use public records to estimate values reported as incalculable. One example involves David Weiner, a leading vaccine researcher at the nonprofit Wistar Institute in Philadelphia, who reports an ownership interest in Inovio Pharmaceuticals. On its website, the publicly traded Inovio indicates it has the exclusive right to license intellectual property arising with a collaboration with Weiner and his lab at Wistar. Inovio is also listed as a subrecipient of an NIH grant to Wistar for Weiner's vaccine-related research. Inovio, in 2018 and 2019 filings with the SEC, disclosed that Weiner held just over 1 million shares of company stock. On the day his financial conflict of interest with Inovio was reported to the NIH in 2018, his shares were worth just under $6 million. Yet Wistar told the NIH that the value of Weiner's ownership stakes could not readily be determined. A spokesman for Wistar Institute and Weiner, Darian Sutton, told ProPublica in an email that, quote, to the best of our knowledge, end of quote, Weiner owns approximately 1 million shares of Inovio. The value of Dr. Weiner's equity interest in Inovio fluctuates due to variable share price, yet the approximate magnitude of that interest has been contemplated and accommodated in an appropriate management plan for the conflicting interest, Sutton wrote. Similarly, Northwestern University does not provide a value for nanoscience researcher Chad Merkin's equity interest in a publicly traded company. Merkin is on the board of directors of Execure, Inc., which could benefit from his NIH-funded research, according to his financial conflict disclosure. Execure, in an SEC filing, reported Merkin was the beneficial owner of more than 11 million shares of company stock. A footnote in the report indicates most of the shares involving Merkin are held by a private company. Merkin, in an email, wrote that he is the chairman of the board of that private company. He said the company is made up of about 30 investors who collectively own the Execure stock. At the time his financial conflict of interest disclosure was filed with the NIH, the Execure shares linked to Merkin, including those held by the private company, were worth just over $26 million. A Northwestern spokesman said that its management plan focuses on ensuring transparency and creating separation between company activities and Northwestern activities in order to avoid biased decision making. In response to questions between ProPublica, Northwestern said Merkin's equity stake in Execure was worth between $400,000 and $445,000 as of December 2nd. A university spokesman wrote in an email that Northwestern has, quote, historically reported equity holdings as a value that cannot be readily determined because their worth fluctuates over time. Wonderful strategy, obfuscate. Okay, on to the next one, also from ProPublica. We asked public universities for their professors' conflict of interest and got the runaround. Sharon Donovan and Richard Mattis have a lot in common. Both are full professors of nutrition science at leading public universities. Both sit on a federal advisory committee that helps craft the nation's dietary guidelines, and both have extensive ties to the food industry. That last similarity isn't easy to uncover. Donovan, who teaches at the University of Illinois at Urbana-Champaign, has reported in required state filings that she receives gifts, honoraria, or consulting income from infant formula companies such as Wyeth Nutrition and Mead Johnson. The state makes her annual reports and those of other University of Illinois employees available to the public. But the similar disclosure that Mattis is required to make to administrators at Purdue University in Indiana is confidential. Under Indiana law and Purdue policy, such conflict of interest reports are considered, quote, personnel records, and therefore inaccessible. When ProPublica requested faculty filings from Purdue this year, our request was denied. Only by reading footnotes in specialized and sometimes expensive academic journals did we learn that in the past 5 years, Mattis has consulted for or received research support from at least 9 companies and trade groups, from Procter & Gamble and PepsiCo Global R&D to the Alliance for Potato Research and Education. All too often, what's publicly known about faculty members' outside activities, even those that could influence their teaching, research, or public policy views, depends on where they teach. Academic conflicts of interest elude scrutiny because transparency varies from one university and one state to the next. ProPublica discovered these inconsistencies over the past year as we sought faculty outside income forms from at least one public university in all 50 states. About 20 state universities complied with our requests. The rest didn't, often citing exemptions from public information laws for personnel records, or offering to provide the documents only if ProPublica first paid thousands of dollars. And even among those that released at least some records, there's a wide range in what types of information are collected and disclosed, and whether faculty members actually fill out the forms as required. Then there's the universe of private universities that aren't subject to public records laws and don't disclose professors' potential conflicts at all. While researchers are supposed to acknowledge industry ties in scientific journals, those caveats generally don't list compensation amounts. We've accumulated by far the largest collection of university faculty staff conflict of interest reports available anywhere, with more than 29,000 disclosures from state schools, which you can see in our new Dollars for Profs database on the ProPublica.org website. But there are tens of thousands that we haven't been able to get from other public universities and countless more from private universities. Sheldon Krimsky, a bioethics expert and professor of urban environmental planning and policy at Tufts University, said that the fractured disclosure landscape deprives the public of key information for understanding potential bias in research. Financial conflicts of interest influence outcomes, he said. Even if the researchers are honorable people, they don't know how the interests affect their own research. Even honorable people can't figure out why they have a predilection towards certain views. It's because they internalize the values of people from whom they are getting funding, even if it's not on the surface. In the 1970s, as discoveries in academia began to attract investments from industry, many universities grew concerned that such partnerships could create conflicts of interest for their faculty. By the 1980s and 1990s, some state universities started to limit how many days faculty could work outside of the university and how much they could earn by moonlighting, but they relied on the faculty to report their outside ties accurately. It was pro forma letting the faculty do what they wanted as long as they taught their courses and did their duties, said Arthur Kaplan, professor of bioethics at New York University School of Medicine. It was up to the faculty to manage and make sure that outside work didn't interfere with their contractual obligations. After the death of 18-year-old Jesse Gelsinger during a gene therapy clinical trial at the University of Pennsylvania in 1999, many universities began to bolster their reporting and monitoring of conflicts. Dr. James Wilson, one of the trial's main investigators, held shares in the biotech company that had the rights to the treatment, creating a potential conflict of interest. Although a disclaimer in the patient consent form disclosed his conflict, Gelsinger's family sued the researcher and the university, settling the suit in the year 2000. Wilson did not respond to questions. Wilson learned from the experience. He later wrote that, quote, "It is impossible to manage perceptions of conflicts of interest in the context of highly scrutinized clinical trials, particularly where there is a tragic outcome." Kaplan was the director of bioethics at Penn at the time and advised on the early stages of the experiment. The perception was that conflicts of interest led to poor management of the experiment, he said. That was one of the most pivotal events that drove forward the idea that universities have to be paying attention to conflicts. Most public and private universities require faculty to file reports on outside income and employment. If the university identifies a possible conflict, it may create a management plan for the professor to limit the potential for bias. Even as universities, both public and private, have stepped up their internal reporting requirements over the past two decades, many public institutions have codified faculty disclosures as private information, making it almost impossible for the public to access the records. More than a third of the nearly 30 state universities that rejected our public records requests cited personnel privacy policies or laws, including Purdue. Zachary Bial, president of the Indiana Coalition for Open Government, said that the state's record law leave little room for interpretation because they don't specifically address conflicts of interest. Purdue is known for limiting access, he said. Purdue University did not respond to ProPublica's questions. As a member of the Dietary Guideline Advisory Committee, Mattis is required to report potential conflicts to the federal government, but those filings are also considered confidential. Without reviewing the journal articles, it would be very difficult to find out what he has received research support from, among others, Japanese food and biotechnology company Ajinomoto, the California Walnut Commission, the Almond Board of California, and Welch Foods. He also has sat on the scientific boards of ConAgra and the Grain Foods Foundation, and he has consulted for ConAgra and life science clinical research company BioFortis. Mattis told ProPublica that his research has often raised issues that would be considered by many to be highly incompatible with the pro-industry perspective, such as salt in processed food and the physiological effects of low-calorie sweeteners. "The science is what matters, not who funded the work," he wrote in an email. "I have a very easy test for avoiding conflicts of interest. If I would hesitate to speak my mind about the outcome of honest science, I don't accept funding, engage in the work, or publish the findings. Ethics starts with the individual, not the funding source." Another professor of nutrition science at Purdue, Regan Bailey, also sits on the Dietary Guidelines Committee and has industry relationships that the university won't reveal, though she disclosed some of them on her unofficial blog. A review of her recent work shows that, as of last year, she was a consultant for Nutrition Impact, a consulting group founded by former Kellogg executor Victor Fulgoni III, who conducts research for food and beverage companies. Bailey and Fulgoni have collaborated on a number of studies, including ones backed by the Sugar Association, Nestle, and Barilla Pasta. Fulgoni declined to respond to ProPublica's questions. This year, Bailey also disclosed in a study on maternal health that she was a consultant for Nestle. Since 2014, her research has received funding from the Dietary Supplement Company, Pharmavite, and she has served as a scientific advisor and government liaison for the ILSA, North American Committee on Fortification, a food industry-backed nonprofit whose members include Coca-Cola, DSM Nutritional Products, General Mills, the Kellogg Company, Nestle USA, and PepsiCo Inc. It's standard practice in academia for nutrition professors. It is standard practice for academia in nutrition for nutrition professors to seek research funding from food companies. Of the 20 members of the Dietary Guidelines Committee, nearly half, including Donovan, Madison, Bailey, have had financial ties to industry over the past 5 years, either through research sponsorship or direct consulting or lobbying work. Professors on the committee are supposed to make research-based recommendations on the intake of fats, beverages, added sugar, and lactation to the U.S. Departments of Agriculture and Health and Human Services, which then draft standards. Donovan, Madison, Bailey, who were appointed this past February, are still reviewing research and won't offer recommendations until 2020. The advisory committee has members who have not received any industry funding and members who have received a mix of both industry and non-industry funding, said Jack Curry, a public affairs specialist for the USDA. Funding sources were reviewed for awareness and to support balance across the committee. Curry added that the department's ethics office reviewed committee members' disclosures and found that all were in compliance with federal ethics rules. He declined ProPublica's request for interviews with committee members. Donovan and Bailey declined to comment. Concerns about the influence of industry have long plagued nutrition science, which historically has shaped the eating habits of everyday Americans. The appearance of conflicts and interests is destructive of public trust, said Marion Nessel, a professor of nutrition, food studies, and public health at New York University, who served on the Guidelines Committee in 1995. Those interests need to be disclosed at a minimum. The set of events behind Jesse Gelsinger's death repeated itself 5 years later at the University of Minnesota. After a patient in a clinical trial there died in 2004, it was revealed that one of the principal investigators of the drug trial, Dr. Stephen Olson, has been paid by pharmaceutical company AstraZeneca, which had sponsored the research. Olson said the money went directly to the university but did support his salary, according to local news reports. The patient's mother sued the researcher and the university. The lawsuit ended in 2008 after a judge ruled the university had, quote, statutory immunity in such cases. The patient's mother settled with the researchers for $75,000. An AstraZeneca spokesman said the company's relationship with healthcare professionals are appropriate and his company and it complies with reporting requirements. Olson did not respond to questions from ProPublica. Faculty members like Dr. Carl Elliott, a professor in the Center of Bioethics and the Department of Pediatrics and Philosophy at the University of Minnesota, pushed for greater transparency about conflicts of interest. While investigating the case, he requested faculty disclosures. In the aftermath of the scandal, the administration made a lot of public promises as far as reform goes, Elliott said. I was looking for information on industry-funded trials in the Department of Psychiatry, and the University of Minnesota stonewalled me on anything. The University of Minnesota also denied ProPublica's records request, stating that the faculty reports were, quote, private personnel data. Don Gemberling, spokesman for the Minnesota Coalition on Government Information, who also helped draft portions of the state's Public Data Act, said the university's lack of disclosure may stem from a fear of employee litigation. It's reasonable from a risk management standpoint to say conflict of interest forms aren't in the list of data that's available to the public, Gemberling said. They treat them as private so they don't get sued by their professors. The University of Nevada, Reno also refused to provide copies of disclosures to ProPublica, calling them, quote, confidential. The university argued the public interest in the documents was outweighed by the university's, quote, need to foster full disclosure by employees. Disclosing these documents publicly would very likely chill employees from providing candid responses to these important questions and limit the university's ability to fully evaluate potential conflicts of interest, the university assistant general counsel Megan Sterich wrote. The university said it would provide copies of disclosure forms with, quote, personally identifying information removed for an estimated cost of $3,140. A handful of other state institutions refused to supply records unless ProPublica paid thousands of dollars. To fulfill our request, the University of Florida said it would take over 5,000 hours and consequently result in extremely large thousands of dollars invoice for the estimated production costs, which must be paid in advance. Clemson University, a public land-grant institution in South Carolina, said it would release 4 years of conflict of interest and outside professional activity forms, but it estimated it would cost ProPublica more than $4,000. After we narrowed our request to the most recent year of data, the university estimated its bill would still be close to $3,000. Similarly, the University of Michigan estimated its price at $2,170, half to be paid in advance. ProPublica chose not to pay Clemson or Michigan. It's a significant problem to have fees of thousands and thousands of dollars, said Jennifer Nelson, a staff attorney for the Reporters Committee for Freedom of the Press, who added that unaffordable fees can be deterrent for all citizens, not just reporters. It defeats the whole purpose of having records laws in the first place. The University of Michigan's flagship campus in Amherst initially informed ProPublica it would provide disclosure of financial interest forms filed by employees since 2016 for a fee of $1,025. After ProPublica paid it, the university decided not to release the documents, claiming they were exempt personnel records. The university returned ProPublica's check. New York balked for another reason. The state's Joint Commission on Public Ethics, which collects the financial disclosures filed by more than 5,000 employees of the state university system, said it would provide forms for individual employees when requested by name, but it would not release its entire database. That, quote, would be a prohibitive task for the commission, given the very small number of staff members who work to fulfill the record requests they receive, it wrote. Other states withheld critical portions of disclosure records, such as compensation amounts or the names of outside employers. The University of Alaska provided ProPublica with the names of faculty members who filled out the conflict of interest reports, but no other information. The data fields you mentioned, like title, outside interest, type of activity, and compensation, type of information, are not stored in the database and is not available during the extraction, said Shiva Hullavarad, a data privacy and compliance officer for the University of Alaska. Hullavard did not offer to provide ProPublica with information on specific employees on request. Some state universities that refused to provide their own disclosure forms did turn over data related to federally funded research. For instance, when professors apply for or receive grants from the National Institutes of Health, they frequently submit conflict of interest reports to their universities, which send the information to NIH. The schools must disclose this information to the public under federal law. Ultimately, we didn't have to collect these forms from each institution because NIH shared its database with us. These records, though, only count for a small fraction of the faculty with potential conflicts. For example, the University of Hawaii, which has nearly 1,000 faculty members, provided ProPublica with fewer than 10 disclosures related to federally funded research. The university cited ProPublica more disclosures citing, quote, significant privacy interest. At private universities which aren't subject to public records laws, we found out about conflicts of interest for professors through their journal activities or disclosures for NIH funding. Dr. Jamie Ard, a professor of epidemiology and prevention at private Wake Forest University and a member of the Advisory Committee on Dietary Guidelines, disclosed in recent journal articles that he had consulted for Nestle, Amgen, Boehringer Ingelheim, Novo Nordisk, and Eisai, and received research support from both Nestle and pharmaceutical company Vivus. In NIH filings, Ard was listed as a consulting medical director for Optifast, a weight loss company from Nestle. Ard and Wake Forest did not respond to email questions. Several of the largest and most prestigious state higher education systems have some of the most stringent rules and best public access to records. California has multiple layers of conflict of interest and outside employment reporting, and all disclosures are considered public records. We received nearly 2,600 forms from all 10 of the University of California campuses, documenting the payments that faculty receive from the private and public sponsors of their research. The Secretary of State of Illinois requires all state employees, including faculty at public universities, to file forms documenting outside work or personal financial interests, such as stocks or real estate. The forms are available to the public in a searchable database, and we have included more than 12,250 Illinois records in Dollars for Profs. However, the forms don't require state employees to report how much they're paid by industry. The University of Texas system does collect the amount of outside compensation, but excised it from the more than 6,200 disclosures given to us. It contended that compensation amounts are private. Seeking the financial information, ProPublica appealed to the State Attorney General's office. It sided with the university. Well, that does it for today's show. If you have any questions or comments, feel free to email me at wakt@toppond.com. If you'd like to re-listen to this show, any previous show, or queue up future shows, feel free to go to toppond.com/blog/WAKT. Thank you for spending this hour with me, my second most favorite hour of the week. I'll be signing off now from the Donald Trump Memorial Studio, and I'll be ending with a quote from the great Mahatma Gandhi. When I despair, I remember that all through history, the way of truth and love has always won. There have been tyrants and murderers, and for a time they can seem invincible. But in the end, they always fall. Always. And let's take it home with Emma's Revolution. I need some justice.